Well, folks, like a couple that gets in a knockdown, drag-out, lamp-throwing, screaming, crying fight, we have to live together after what happened on Wednesday. Recriminations and prosecutions will not be enough to have us come together as a country and move forward, because as it stands, we still have to live together. So we're here today to try and figure out how we can do that. I'm Patrick Cunningham, and this is Socratic Citizen. So the world has turned on Trump. We see now what the line is. We know exactly how far Trump can take his antics and how far his supporters can take their antics before the American people, the American establishment. And I don't just mean the politicians in Washington. I mean just about every respectable person in America finally says, no, that is too much. And basically everyone has deserted Trump. He has conceded the election and committed to a peaceful transfer of power. As far as we can tell, the future will be Trumpless, barring a Jesus-like resurrection of his political career and legitimacy. We will not be seeing Trump in office, or indeed, really, I think, in the public square at all moving forward. However, that does not mean that Trump's supporters go away. That does not mean that the anger and frustration, the sense of disenfranchisement and marginalization which led to the rise of Donald Trump goes away. And that's why I like my couple having a really bad fight metaphor, because we're kind of in the morning after period here. You know, the couple fights, they throw things at each other. They bring up everything that the other one has ever done wrong, and they go to bed. And now it's the morning after, and now we have to try and learn to forgive one another, and we have to try to learn to live together. Of course, it's not clear, right now at least, how on earth we're going to do that. And so far, most of the people commentating on this, most of the people looking at this issue, are not doing anything to help. They are, as far as I can tell, doing everything they can to make this worse. So one thing I want to talk about before we dive into kind of what's going on with Trump and where we go after this, I want to pick up a thread that we started talking about yesterday. There wasn't a clear answer on it, but we're starting to get some clear answers here. The dust is beginning to settle a little bit, and we're at least getting some of the broad outlines of what really went down and what this all is going to look like. There's an old story, a famous story, well, not that old, it's from the 1990s, that in the 1990s, a reporter asked the Chinese premier, I don't remember his name, it was the guy before Xi Jinping. They asked this premier, what do you think of the French Revolution? And he said, too early to tell. And that was 200 years later. So I think that a little bit of that perspective would be helpful here. But a lot of people in the MAGA camp are just not understanding how this could happen. They're looking at their own movement and going, how could it have come to this? And I understand where they're coming from. It is very strange. I remember hearing the Transition Integrity Project before the election saying, if Biden doesn't win by a landslide, there's going to be riots. A narrow Trump win or a narrow Biden win, both of these result in riots. And I remember people on the right saying, no, conservatives don't do that. MAGA people don't riot like that. That's a left-wing thing. And I was like, you know what? That makes a kind of sense. You know, they're the law and order people. They're the respect the law people. We love the police, so on and so forth. Makes perfect sense to me that they would find other ways to go about expressing their grievances. And so we have to take a look at stuff like this. This is from American Thinker, kind of the bee's nest of, or even the queen's chamber of the bee's nest when it comes to the America First MAGA crowd. Not quite as much as some people we're going to talk about here later, because I did some research and I got some interesting stuff to show you guys. But this goes to what we were talking about yesterday with people on the Trump side saying that it was Antifa or other provocateurs who had infiltrated the Trump camp and kind of purposely turned everything into a riot, insurrection, whatever you want to call it, in order to make Trump look bad, as you can see from the headline of this article. Worrisome signs the Capitol breach was planned to discredit Trump supporters, an eyewitness account. So it says it may be weeks before we fully understand the fallout from the January 6th, 2021 storming of the Capitol building. Well, based on what I said a minute ago, I'm inclined to disagree and say it may be centuries before we understand the fallout. But the prevailing consensus from conservative talk radio hosts and editors is that this event provided ammunition to Trump's enemies and gave squishy Republicans an excuse to abandon their objections to the certification of Biden's electors. They may be true, but based on what I saw, experienced firsthand, that's not a great sentence. I think it should say that may be true, but based on what I saw and experienced firsthand, I am conflicted on what to say about those who entered the building. According to the website wildprotest.com, I'm not sure about this, but I think wild may refer to like why I love Donald. I don't know. That's just my, I don't know. And it's not important right now. What is important right now is that the original plan was to gather at the White House Ellipse from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m., then gather at the North Lawn of the Capitol building at 1 p.m. As you may well know, not only did it not happen this way, but the aforementioned website went blank. Did they take it down to make it harder for Trump supporters to show that storming the building was never part of the initial plan? This is where I think a lot of Trump people are at right now, just grasping at just about any straw to believe that something other than what happened, happened. Because for reasons we're going to point to in a second, I don't think this was provocateurs, at least not ones that disagree with or that dislike Trump. Not Antifa, not left-wing provocateurs, not CIA people. This was indeed MAGA people. What it does is represents a part of the MAGA movement that has flown largely under the radar since about 2017, but as it turns out, didn't actually go anywhere. So my group boarded a DC Metro train at 10:30 a.m., Upon arrival to the next station, I saw three young men board the train with dark clothes and skeleton face masks. My immediate concern was that these were Antifa thugs who would give us trouble as soon as they saw us get off the train with our signs. As I watched them from the corner of my eye, I noticed that one of them wore a cape with the American Revolution snake, "Join or Die." Were these Trump supporters? Something did not seem quite right. As the train approached our destination, other rally participants started to fill our coach, and we arrived at the Ellipse with no incident. The participants at the Ellipse were, for the most part, in good spirits and remarkably friendly, just as they had been in other Stop the Steal rallies. Most attendees were white, most non-whites were Asian. Two of the people who complimented me on my poster were African Americans, the author says. The main thing, this is fascinating. This sounds like something out of a 1960s movie. The main difference that struck me as unusual during this rally, apart from the three young men who boarded the train, was the frequent smell of marijuana. Trump supporters smoking weed? What? Heaven forbid. We were present during much of the president's speech, but we could not hear it clearly, so we walked to the National Mall in search of a bathroom, so on and so forth. There's a paragraph about bathrooms. We got caught up in the march. I saw no evidence of people moving to the North Lawn as previously planned. I also noticed that the people first arriving at the building were on average much younger than the group I had left at the Ellipse. These are the sort of details that normally would be meaningless, that no one would even really remember. I do think it's kind of funny, the guy pointing out, hey, why are these people smoking weed? Surely a Trump rally, no one would be smoking weed. That's completely outside of the realm of reality. I understand that smoking weed might be more of a left-wing thing, but in this case, I think that it is immaterial. or at least it doesn't mean what this author hopes that it means. So the young people started to climb the stairs of the Capitol. Stairs, another subpar sentence here, and the inauguration bleachers flanking each side of the stairs. Since I was far behind the crowd, it was not clear to me whether or not they had pushed through police barricades in order to get there, but as I neared the building, I saw what appeared to be metal barricades that had been pushed aside as we neared the building. So we have a young man with a bullhorn on a scaffolding urging participants forward. Then we heard what sounded like ceremonial cannon fire. I don't know about you. I don't have a lot of ceremonial cannon fire in my personal experience, so that's not the metaphor that I normally go for. But whatever. I understand. Saw smoke. Smelled tear gas. Okay. Was not aware that anyone had entered the building until someone with an iPhone told me gleefully that Congress had evacuated the chambers and the vote was delayed. I was shocked and wondered if she had a point in celebrating what happened. See, these are the MAGA people that we were all talking about when we said, no, Trump people would never riot. That's not who they are. We're talking about these guys right here. The guys who are shocked and just kind of scandalized a little bit that there would be the smell of weed at a Trump rally and who are concerned about breaching the Capitol building. As no doubt many of the people who attended the protest turned riot were horrified to find out what had actually happened at their protest turned riot. So up to that moment, I had not witnessed any of the violence involved in pushing through the barricades or entering the building. The only destruction of property I witnessed firsthand was the alleged Antifa infiltrator breaking a window. Yuri Petrov says hello. Hi, Yuri Petrov. Welcome to the stream. So these alleged Antifa infiltrators, I had someone yesterday kind enough to send me some pictures saying that the, I guess it was a facial recognition software company said, hey, we've identified these two people. They were also on this Antifa website. And then I guess the other side is going, no. They were on the Antifa website because they were being outed as Nazis. So, you know, one side says one thing, one says another. I do have reason to believe that there were not, if there were Antifa infiltrators there, they were not the causative thing. They were not the reason why this went the way it did. Those Nerdy Metal guys says, sadly, this riot didn't have excessive looting. How did the gift shop go unmolested? Those Nerdy Metal guys, you have brought up something I'm going to get to shortly, which is to talk about people who like to compare what happened over the summer with BLM riots and anti-BLM infiltrated by Antifa or assisted by Antifa, whatever, versus what happened on Wednesday, which is we're going to do that here in a second. Right now, I want to talk about the reaction of the Trump people and what's happened to Trump, but we will get there. Yuri Petrov says, why was the woman shot? As far as we know, and we're going off of like cell phone videos and reports, which are often conflicting, but as far as we know, as far as my research can ascertain, she was shot not by the Capitol Police, and again, keep in mind, this story may change. As far as I know, she was shot by a Secret Service person because the protesters, rioters, whatever you want to call them, had reached, it was either the House or the Senate chamber. The Secret Service had barricaded the inside and they were all pointing their guns through the windows. One of the windows was broken and this woman was trying to climb through the window when she was shot from the other side in the neck. I think the real answer to your question, though, Yuri, is that she was shot because it was an extremely tense situation. I think a lot of the Capitol Police and Secret Service were unprepared for this because, you know, like we said, a lot of people going into this had said, oh, no, Trump people don't act like this. They're not that kind of people. They don't believe in rioting. They would never do this. And so they didn't really look for this sort of thing. And so when it did happen, everyone was caught unawares. But we'll also talk about the Capitol Police here in a moment. I do have an article about that. So this guy says, suddenly the three young men I saw earlier on the train with scary masks in the front but pro-America symbols on their back, kind of like an Antifa mullet, Antifa in the front, Trump supporter in the back. That made sense to me, as well as did the widespread smell of marijuana. I just can't get over the fact that for this guy, the smell of marijuana is like evidence of leftists. Like, I smell communists. It smells like weed. But anyway, as I walked away from the crowd at the Capitol, an elderly man asked me my opinion on what had just transpired. I told him that I heard the vote had been delayed, but remained undecided as to whether or not this was a good thing. He then proceeded to tell me that a young lady was shot dead while entering the Capitol building and lamented that God did not want it to happen this way. So based on what I saw and read, I have no doubt that dozens and possibly even hundreds of Antifa and or other provocateurs had infiltrated the rally in order to carry out violent acts and suck impressionable Trump supporters into their antics. So I'm not so sure about this whole suck impressionable Trump supporters into their antics. No doubt that is a thing that is done. You can go to a protest, start rioting, other people will join in because that's just the nature of crowds, and then you can stand back and go, well, look, it turned into a riot. Clearly these people are insane. But I don't think that's what happened here. Yuri Petrov says, what was next? They opened doors and let other people get in. Yes, in general, it seemed like, and again, this is all still very iffy, it seemed like, and on the outside of the Capitol building, you had certain areas where police, for reasons we still don't really understand, were actually removing barricades and letting people who were at that point still just protesters, they weren't rioters yet, letting them through the barricades. So there was like, I think, four levels of security. From the very outermost one outside the Capitol all the way into the Senate and House chambers and the Capitol Rotunda. So as far as I can tell, the initial police were fighting with the Trump supporters. Then they removed barricades, at least in some places. Then they kind of had to retreat once they were inside the Capitol building. And ultimately, yeah, see, Yuri, you're asking questions that there are just not clear answers to this yet. We don't really know everything yet. We may never get a clear story. Because it's not like the news media was there with a helicopter or a drone flying overhead that can tell us clearly, oh, here's what happened. We have cell phone videos and the conflicting reports of various witnesses, and I don't know why the police let people get in. I've seen the videos. I have not seen any explanation for it. My guess is that some of the police were sympathetic to the movement, that a lot of the police were, in fact, themselves Trump supporters. A lot of the Capitol police maybe believed the election was stolen. And we saw, for example, certain members of the Capitol police taking selfies with the rioters inside the Capitol building as they chant ACAF, which is the right-wing version of ACAB, ACAB being all cops are bastards, ACAF being all cops are friends. So I did some reading and some research on this Antifa thing, and the thing that really convinced me was when I went and found, okay, because this stream is also on DLive, which is like a blockchain streaming site for those who are not familiar, because I live in perpetual fear that someday big tech will crack down on me and my reasonableness and, you know, demand that I be shut down. So I like to spread it out. As it turns out, the king of DLive, the most watched channel on that site, is actually a guy named Nick Fuentes, he's notable. He was at the Unite the Right rally back in 2016. He's kind of a like white nationalist, hardcore nationalist, really hardcore America First kind of guy. And he was actually at the thing on Wednesday. But I went and listened to, I was like, what does this guy have to say about this? And we'll talk about a couple of people like that from the deep, dark caverns of the underbelly of the Trump movement. And he was, at no point was he upset about what happened. At no point was he apologetic about what happened. In fact, the 10 minutes of his stream that I listened to, he said, people need to stop saying that this was Antifa. It was not Antifa. It was us. We did this because we are in a war. We took the Capitol. We took back the People's House. For just a moment on Wednesday, the people were the ones in charge of the government, so on and so forth. And ultimately, he said, it was not Antifa. It was us. We acted in line with the traditions of our ancestors. And when the government didn't listen to us, we went and took our house back. That, to me, says, okay, this was not, if there were provocateurs, they were Trump-supporting provocateurs. And that is a part of the Trump movement that really has not been very visible for a long time. They haven't really had a lot of fighting to do. This is like in about on the same level as the Proud Boys, but I'm inclined to think that these people are what the Proud Boys pretend to be. Because I still just don't take the Proud Boys completely seriously, because I've also listened to Gavin McInnes, their founder, before. And I mean, not to be mean, but he strikes me as a little bit clownish, like a little bit of a circus character. So a lot of Trump people horrified to find out that in their ranks are these types of angry, wannabe violent people. But of course, it had virtually no impact. Regardless of what anybody could have done on Wednesday, and those of us who are reasonable knew this watching, we were going, guys, this is not going to accomplish anything. You will get literally nothing out of this except more hatred and more crackdowns from your opponents. You are literally playing into their hands. This is the worst idea ever. This little contingent within the MAGA movement that decided this was a good idea really hurt everybody else. Just like Lynn Wood telling people in Georgia not to vote in the Republican runoffs, not to vote for Republicans in the runoffs in Georgia on Tuesday, gave the Senate to the Democrats. This same contingent of people who's like, oh my God, this is a war. The government doesn't represent us. Trump is the only person on our side. It's us and Trump versus the American government. That group of people has really, really damaged the Trump movement to the extent, I think, that any populism, any right-wing populism that happens in America after this is going to happen without Trump. Because at this point, he basically amounts to a toxic presence within the MAGA movement. So if you are a MAGA person, if you are a Trump supporter, the time has come to find somebody else. And there are some good candidates for a populist movement. And I want to talk at the end about what I would like to see happen, which would be a kind of alliance of left and right populists. Those who have watched this show before will be familiar with my argument that populists on the left and populists on the right actually have a lot more in common than they have separating them. So Trump has basically been abandoned by the entire establishment, the media establishment, the political establishment. Everybody is doing their best to get as far away from Trump as they can. So the American Spectator, while they still refuse to acknowledge the legitimacy of the election, they point out that Congress has indeed certified it. And this, I think, is very telling because although Trump is done and the Trump movement, at least in that name and in that form, is basically over with, the people who think the election was stolen, the people on the right who think the government is against them, are not going anywhere. Yuri Petrov wants to know who will be a good new candidate for the MAGA movement after Trump. Now, it's hard to predict the future because, as we know, Trump came out of nowhere. No one saw this coming. Trump appearing out of nowhere as a former super donor to Nancy Pelosi and Hillary Clinton, friend and supporter, to come out and raise the populist right from its long slumber. So anything I say, take with a grain of salt. But I think Ron DeSantis in Florida might be a good candidate for a populist right movement. Also, Kristi Noem in South Dakota might be a good candidate. I've also heard rumors, whispers, whatever you want to call it, that Tulsi Gabbard might make a good head for the Trump, the movement formerly known as the Trump movement. I think that if Tulsi Gabbard does end up the head of the new movement, it's going to be because the movement has incorporated a lot of people from the left. Like when you saw people who were frustrated by Bernie Sanders kind of getting his nomination stolen there in 2016 by Hillary Clinton. If Bernie had run for president, we might not have ever gotten President Trump. It might have been President Bernie, because there was a contingent of people who switched when Bernie didn't get the Democratic nomination. They voted for Trump because what they wanted was an outsider. What they wanted was to shake up politics in the United States, which feels to a lot of people, including me, very locked in, running on rails that we just can't seem to get it off of. It's going to do what it's going to do, regardless of what the American people want. So I think somebody like Tulsi could pull from the populist right and the populist left. And also, I like her because she introduced bills in the House to call on the president to pardon Edward Snowden and Julian Assange. But they didn't go anywhere. Surprise, surprise. But she's got a lot of support on right and left. Republicans really like her. And I think Democrats who are honest with themselves or more interested in good candidates, good people, and a good country than they are in winning battles on behalf of the party would be willing to go along with her. So anyway, Trump has lost his access to Facebook. He was kicked off of Twitter or suspended from Twitter for 12 hours. He had to go back and delete some tweets. That is the first time that's ever happened. Zuckerberg wants to keep Trump off of the platform forever. So Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg said Thursday that his company would continue to prevent President Trump from posting on their platform for at least the next 2 weeks until he exits office. Though I think those of us who have neurons to rub together know that President Trump, I don't think will be exactly a huge force in politics anytime soon. Knight Mirror, welcome back. What do you think of the video he posted yesterday? Are you referring to Trump? I'm not sure who you're talking about. Or are you talking about Zuckerberg? I haven't watched either video, frankly, whether it's a Zuckerberg video or a Trump video. So post a link if you've got one and I'll pull it up and we can watch it. So we believe, Zuckerberg said, we believe the risks of allowing the president to continue to use our service during this period are simply too great, Mr. Zuckerberg said in a post on Facebook. Therefore, we are extending the block we have placed on his Facebook and Instagram accounts indefinitely and for at least the next 2 weeks until after the peaceful transition of power is complete. So, and then Trump's education secretary, Betsy DeVos, has submitted her resignation in the wake of all this. She said President Donald Trump's role in spurring the mob that breached the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday was the, quote, inflection point, whatever that means, making her the second cabinet member to resign over the incident. The first, of course, being Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao, as U.S. News reports. She submitted her resignation from the Trump administration on Thursday, the first of his cabinet secretaries to do so after mobs of Trump supporters stormed the Capitol building as Congress was formally recognizing Joe Biden's victory in the presidential race. So she said yesterday, our country experienced a traumatic and entirely avoidable event as supporters of the president stormed the Capitol building following a rally he addressed. As I'm sure is the case with many of you, it has deeply troubled me in a way that I simply cannot set aside. Knight Mirror says second secretary, sixth member of the cabinet. Yes, that just really reinforces the point here, which is that everyone is currently deserting Trump. And aides of Trump have spoken to reporters in secret. These are the same aides that are always speaking to reporters in secret. talking about Trump has told his aides, apparently, that he wants to pardon himself, as reports claim. Those Nerdy Metal guys says Facebook and Twitter are jokes. Their overt venom for the outgoing president has only been emboldened by his official loss in the elections. They are cowards who fear the truth. Well, I don't think that it's completely outside of the realm of reality to suggest that Twitter and Facebook have disliked Trump for a long time, and that now, like wolves who smell blood or a mob that sees you running away from it, they kind of turn from guarded, waiting for their opportunity, to pouncing, and that this is something they've wanted to do for a long time. And rather than being a reaction to what happened, this is them seizing an opportunity they've been waiting for some time. I don't think that's crazy to say. I think it's probably, in fact, true. And I think that it's interesting also that they seem to, and this speaks to this "they're cowards who fear the truth" thing, I think it speaks a little bit to their short-sightedness, that the approach they want to take is to shut everything down, kick everybody off. I really don't think that that's going to help anything for reasons we're going to talk about here in a second. So last thing, and there's a bit of humor in this, at least I think so. I mean, if you're upset, then I understand. This is a trying time, but surely we can smile a little bit at the idea of Iraq trying to spread a little freedom and democracy to the United States by issuing an arrest warrant for Donald Trump over the Soleimani killing. The Associated Press reports from Baghdad that an arrest warrant was issued Thursday for outgoing President Donald Trump in connection with the killing of an Iranian general and a powerful Iraqi militia leader last year, Iraq's judiciary said. Nightmaro says it's hilarious that those aides talk to the media all the time. Why? Do it in public or help the person you want to help. But this? You know, for most of Trump's presidency, I felt the same way. I always wondered, who are these people that are just secretly talking to the media all the time in Trump's cabinet? Or not in his cabinet, in among the aides. I have to imagine these are like disgruntled interns who were asked to go get one too many coffees. In this case, I get it. Everybody is doing their best to get away from Trump. I'm not surprised at all that aides are talking to the media and that cabinet members are resigning. So this is the great leaving of Trump. So this arrest warrant in Iraq was issued by a judge in Baghdad's investigative court tasked with probing the Washington-directed drone strike that killed General Qasem Soleimani and Abdul Mahdi al-Muhandis, the court's media office said. They were killed outside the capital's airport last January. So the arrest warrant was for a charge of premeditated murder, which carries the death penalty on conviction. So Iraq wants to execute the president of the United States, or the soon-to-be ex-president of the United States. It is unlikely to be carried out, but symbolic in the waning days of Trump's presidency. I don't remember if we talked about this or if it was just on my list of candidate stories a couple days ago, but I believe Iran has also issued a warrant for the president's arrest. So I guess Trump can't run to Iraq or Iran if people in the United States try to prosecute him. But I understand this is a dark time for those who are Trump supporters, and I'm certainly not here to heap any more unhappiness on their head for reasons I'm going to get to here as we come into the second half of this episode. So Trump says that all avenues are exhausted and calls for national unity. He finally sounds like Al Gore after he conceded the elections. This is from Newsmax, normally a very Trump-supporting news outlet. This is the outlet that people turned to when they felt like Fox News had betrayed the Trump movement, specifically by calling the state of Arizona for Biden early on election day. As it turns out, like weeks before we knew what the actual issue was or what the actual result was in Arizona. Nightmare says, yeah, then do it in public because then you have the public face as against the president. I suppose it's more like a thing for their own morality, so they don't think they did fuck up while working for the administration. And I think to some extent these are people who are not interested in the fallout that comes from speaking out publicly. Maybe these are people who also would like to hold on to their jobs and speaking out against the president right now. He can still fire people. Like, he still has the powers of the president. He still has the nuclear codes. Unless they've impeached him since I started doing this episode, then yeah, he's still the president. He can still fire people. And OANN wrote something yesterday as well. Yeah, everybody has basically turned on him at this point. And that's pretty much where I was going with talking about all of this. And of course, he's not the only one to ascend the pillory. The Capitol Police Chief is to resign next week, as U.S. News reports. The chief of police responsible for protecting the U.S. Capitol will reportedly resign next week after a violent mob of Donald Trump supporters stormed the seat of the federal government on Wednesday. The Associated Press first reported that U.S. Capitol Police Chief Stephen Sund plans to resign hours after the 30-year veteran issued a statement describing as heroic the actions and inactions of his officers. Well, Yuri, I hear you. What will be next? Corruptioners 1. This goes to the questions you were asking earlier. Why did we see videos of police removing barricades and letting Trump supporters into the Capitol? What was that about? And while we don't have answers, maybe the Capitol Police know something we don't. What we can say for sure is that the Capitol Police did not behave the way they should have. And indeed, the way they behaved contributed to what's happening now with everybody abandoning Trump. If the Capitol Police had stood their ground and not let Trump supporters into the Capitol, then Trump's enemies would not currently have the ammunition that they do. That this moment would look very, very different. So, and I don't know who you mean by corruptioners, Yuri. I'm assuming, based on your phraseology here, that you mean the Biden team. And yes, Biden has been declared the president-elect. Contrary to what the media has been saying for the last few weeks, it's not until now that he really becomes the president-elect officially. Technically, he was the projected president-elect until just recently, but that's neither here nor there, because what we need to talk about is what comes next. What we need to talk about is what happens now that Trump is basically a political non-entity. Because as people like those nerdy metal guys demonstrate, just because Trump is going away does not mean that his supporters and people who are skeptical of big tech and big government in general are going to go home and become good little Democrats. They're going to be around, and they're still going to be upset. And I don't think that this is really going to slow them down. As I mentioned, there's this Nick Fuentes guy who was talking about Wednesday as a great victory for the Trump movement, who was talking about Wednesday as awesome, an awesome victory in the war against the corporate state and Black Lives Matter. And that guy is not going anywhere. Even if you silence him and ban him from everything, someone else will come along saying the same thing. There's a reason why when I clicked onto his live stream last night, there were 26,000 people watching. Because these ideas have traction. And they don't have traction for no reason, right? It's not like Trump came out of nowhere that he, to quote George Carlin, passed through a membrane from another reality. Politicians in America come from American homes and American families. Political movements come from American homes and American families. Guys like Trump saying things like Trump said, don't get to become the president, don't get to become the most popular president with their party in, I think, the history of the Republican Party. Trump was more popular than Reagan among Republicans, especially during those primary things. That's a highly bastardized Carlin quote. Corporal Fly. Everybody's always talking about politicians. Everyone says they suck, but they didn't fall out of the sky. They didn't pass through a membrane from another reality. They came from American homes and American families is the original version. But those people, they are just regular Americans, and they are upset. They feel disenfranchised. They feel that their back is against the wall, and that's why they acted the way they did on Wednesday. And that's why they think that the government is corrupt, and that's why you have even the American Spectator, an otherwise relatively respectable right-wing publication, saying Congress certifies the stolen election. Not Congress certifies the election. Not, oh, we finally reach a conclusion, now we know the election's legitimate. No, Congress certifies stolen election. Yuri says, Trump revealed the truth about corrupted government to everyone. He has definitely awoken a movement that was silent up until now. Nightmaro says, I don't think he will get impeached and thrown out. It's just too short of a time. I agree. The point, and I think someone pointed this out yesterday, the whole thing with impeaching him and throwing him out is to make sure that he can't ever run again. I read something yesterday that Chao resigned because Pence said he wasn't supportive of the usage of the 25th. Poor Mike Pence. I feel so bad for that guy right now because he's like a respectable church-going, just quiet, soft-spoken, solid guy, salt-of-the-earth kind of fellow, and he's caught in the middle of all of this, and it just, I feel bad for him. I really do. He is in a really bad position. But Trump supporters are not going anywhere. They may not be Trump supporters anymore. We may have to call them something else now. I like right-wing populists, nationalists, whatever you want to call them. But here, going back to American Thinker, they say in D.C., oligarchy beats democracy every time. A much higher share of the American public, the article begins, believes that the U.S. government is lying about its knowledge of UFOs than telling the truth about the 2020 presidential election. How's that for credibility? The big government, big tech, big media machine that is invested in removing Donald Trump from office is so confident in its position that it keeps shouting, there's nothing to see here, and every day there's more and more to see. Data scientists with weighty reputations allege that over 40,000 votes for Trump were likely deleted or switched to Joe Biden in Georgia. And they allege that over 400,000 votes were removed from Trump in Pennsylvania, in addition to the Commonwealth's inexplicable reporting of 200,000 more ballots cast than people who voted. In Wisconsin, the state Supreme Court has ruled that 200,000 votes were likely illegal, but insists that none be purged until each ballot is individually investigated. So it rehashes a lot of the same issues that have been brought up over and over and over again. And yet it says that ultimately the establishment in D.C., the oligarchy, still gets what they want, with the idea being that what the oligarchy really wants is a Joe Biden presidency because Donald Trump is too dangerous and too American and he's got too big of a bulge in his pants to really be trusted with the nuclear codes and the reins of power. And you can agree with this or you can disagree with this. What you can't say is that this doesn't matter, that all we need to do is censor these people and they will just go away. All we have to do is just kick them off of social media, put them on AOC's list, make sure that they are completely banned from polite society, to borrow her words. And it's like they're going to go away. No, the more you push them out of the mainstream, the more they're going to go underground, the more of them are going to start listening to Nick Fuentes, and the more likely they are to use extrajudicial, extra-legal, extra-legitimate means to try and achieve their goals, because you will be reconfirming their suspicion. And I think Yuri said it down here. Biden's government will pursue patriots. Yeah, so that's a lot of people in the United States believe that. I bet he will ban guns and put the country in strict lockdown. Fortunately, Yuri, we do have constitutional protections that are not completely shredded, and I don't think he can just say, oh, the country's locked down now. That will result in some real serious riots. Those Nerdy Metal Guys says, question, will the QAnon movement or Patriot movement fall silent after Trump leaves town? I hear you say populist supporters aren't going anywhere, but without a strong leader, what will happen? Well, Nerdy Metal Guys, nature abhors a vacuum. And sooner or later, someone will step up who can lead the movement. What Trump really did, because Trump from the beginning, he's not a man for all seasons. You see what I'm saying? He's not like, I don't think that Trump would have been a good president if it was 1967 right now. I don't think that Trump would have been a good president in 1930. I don't think that Trump would have been a good replacement for Abraham Lincoln. Trump was exactly who the country needed for 2016, for this particular moment. But what we had to recognize was that moment was going to pass. And what we saw on Wednesday was the end of that moment and the beginning of a new moment. It's very infrequently that you can really lay down a solid, like, thick black line and say, here is the end of one era and the beginning of another. But on Wednesday, we saw the end of one era and the beginning of another. We saw the end of the Trump era and the beginning of the post-Trump era. Those people are not just going to go back to sleep. There's no going back to 2015. There's no going back to 2010. We're in 2021 now. And what that means is that forever, Trump is in the memory of those right-wing populists. Trump is in the memory of what you're calling the Patriot Movement and what no doubt calls themselves the Patriot Movement. And forever after, they're going to know we have the ability to affect change. We have the ability to get what we want. Unfortunately, they've had a bit of a setback here recently, but they're not just going to go home. They're not just going to start voting for Paul Ryan's. Corporal Fly says, great season finale to America. I feel like I just bust a four-year-old nut. People could misinterpret that statement, but I think maybe Wednesday was the grand finale of the annus horribilis that was 2020. Don't make fun of my Latin pronunciation, but that was the end of 2020 right there. That was really, they say the day John Lennon was shot was the day the 60s died. The day Trump supporters stormed the Capitol was the day 2020 finally ended. Or maybe 2021 is just going to be more crazy than 2020. I guess we'll have to see what happens. So I wanted to take a look at this and talk about where we go from here, because we have to live together. We have to have a country. We can't just all kill each other because that would be mean and it would hurt. And I don't want to live in a civil war. I'm sure that nobody watching this wants to live in a civil war either, because civil wars are uncomfortable. And they are dangerous, and they're bad for business. And I cannot imagine that I can just sit here and, like, have a show on these platforms on YouTube and Twitch as long as there is a civil war going on. I imagine that whatever big tech censorship does already exist will get worse if we go into civil war. And I think, honestly, there's a lot to be said for the possibility of compromise. My official position is, and I've said it a million times, left populists and right populists, BLM and MAGA, have a lot more in common than they realize. What happens is they end up yelling at each other. They end up fighting over little issues. When they largely agree on things, their fundamental differences are like in attitudes, or like, what color hoodie do you wear? Because I think there's a lot of people at the top of the country that like it that way. And I have this written down. It's every level at which people benefit from us fighting with each other over pointless things. So yeah, the people who are really in charge benefit at multiple stages of the process of getting everyone to yell at each other. You might call this like the media corporate government complex, since everything's a complex. So the people who are really in charge benefit at multiple stages. First, the media. And this goes for independent media, mainstream media, CNN, Fox News, and The Blaze, and whatever else. They all benefit from the rhetoric and the violence. When there's people yelling at each other, when there's people setting stuff on fire, the media benefits. Insofar as I, sitting here with a show, constitutes some sort of independent media, I had more viewers today and yesterday than normal. I saw a big boost in viewership. So I don't want to sit here and like smugly go, oh man, well that was great for me at least. But it's obvious that when there's chaos, the media benefits. So what do they end up doing? Of course, they end up fanning the flames of whatever conflicts there might be. It always gets reported in the most inflammatory possible way. If it bleeds, it leads. So the media benefits from rhetoric and violence. Politicians benefit from having enemies to fight against. There's no better way to unite your movement behind you than by pointing out all the enemies that we have to go fight. This is really just like politicians hacking the human psyche. Because humans, we're tribal creatures. I don't think it's necessarily a fault, but it can be misused. And it does get misused by grifting and self-interested politicians who are only too happy to convince you that their neighbors, that your neighbors are your enemies, and only by voting for me can we defeat these evil enemies who want to destroy America. So the media benefits from chaos. Politicians benefit from you thinking that there's some enemy that we have to root out, whether that enemy is terrorists in Iraq, Black Lives Matter protesters downtown, or MAGA patriots storming the Capitol, or Trump destroying America with his Twitter account. And then the moneyed interests, and this goes back to a Carlin quote again, actually, the moneyed interests benefit from a divided populist who never thinks to unite to demand things in their interest instead of in the interests of the large corporations and donors that essentially purchase the elections for their own benefit. So basically, you've got a very much tilted table, very much an incline on which we all live. And that incline causes all objects to roll in the direction of chaos and fighting and hating each other. And that doesn't lead to very conducive politics. And it's something that we, the people, have to recognize and arrest if we are going to have a country. Because we are in a dangerous place right now. Not because Trump is so evil that he's going to, like, nuke America itself because he can't be the president of it. No. A dangerous place because this moment, depending on how this moment is used, I think will determine what the ultimate consequences of it will be. This can be the moment where we go, hold on, wait a second, what are we doing? We're supposed to be like Americans. We're supposed to share a country here. We're supposed to have something in common. The United States is different from a lot of other countries. And that we don't have that like 10 zillion year history of, oh, our ancestors were living here when everybody was walking around in loincloths and killing their dinner with rocks. You know, we don't have that kind of ancestral thing. We've only been here for, I mean, at most, what, 400 years? That's not really a long time, right? There are families in the British peerage that have been there longer than Americans have been in America. And we're not really, as much as some other people might want to disagree with this, let's be real, America's not a racial country either. There's not like one American ethnicity. Even just among Europeans, we are 27 different European ethnicities. Plus African ethnicities, Asian ethnicities, South American ethnicities, all sorts of people live here. The idea, what's supposed to unite us is supposed to be a set of propositions. What's supposed to unite us is supposed to be a common culture, a set of shared values and goals that at the end of the day, after we finish fighting with each other in the public square, we can go home and just be friends and be neighbors and say, I disagree with what you think, but at least we share these common values. But because of the way the media, politicians and big companies benefit from having us fighting with each other all the time, we forget about that. And it's an iterative process. As every time it happens, every time we run through the cycle of conflict appears, the media fans the flame, the politicians use it to get elected, and the moneyed interests use it to maintain their quiet control of what actually goes on in state houses and in Washington, it gets worse. We get a little bit further away from what we're supposed to be. We become a little bit less of a people and more of an us and a them. More less of a football league and more of a my team is awesome and your team sucks. But every so often we have to remember that just because you're a fan of one team and I'm a fan of another does not mean that we're not both playing the same sport. Does not mean that we're both here to enjoy the game. Not that this is a game. I'm using a football metaphor. You understand what I'm doing here. All right. So point being, we got to figure out how we're going to do this. Fortunately, some of the MAGA people who were engaging in some rather naked whataboutism on Wednesday and Thursday gave me exactly what I needed to talk about this properly. And what they did, what they said was, oh, how dare you, you dirty, dirty Democrats, criticize Trump supporters for storming the Capitol because your guys, your buddies over at BLM, caused all sorts of damage. And we remember, of course, the famous Axios report that noted that the riots over the summer, the BLM and Antifa protests that turned into riots, right? I know, 93% of the protests didn't have any violence. The 7% that did caused over $1 billion in property damage over the summer, right? So we've got people on every side here who are a little bit, have some blood on their hands, or at least some soot from burning down a building on their hands, right? And we remember even the Seattle police chief ended up resigning over all of that. Notably because Seattle responded to those riots by defunding their police force, which was what the protesters, rioters, whatever you want to call them, actually wanted. So we cannot say, oh, well, when you guys did it, you got everything you wanted. When my guys did it, we got yelled at and beat up. So obviously America loves you and hates me. So there's more reason for us to go to war with each other. One of the things I saw the MAGA people doing who were trying to excuse the criminal behavior in the Capitol on Wednesday by pointing out criminal behavior at Black Lives Matter riots was to point to two Vox articles. One of them was this one that says riots are destructive, dangerous, and scary, but can lead to serious social reforms, talking about left-wing violent riots. And then they had one, another Vox article that said every single person who breached the Capitol should be arrested. I would go so far as to say both of those things can be true, that if you break the law, you should be arrested. If you are a Trump supporter and you breach the Capitol, unfortunately, you've committed some crimes and you are going to be arrested. If you think that it's worth getting arrested to make your political point, then hey, I mean, you know, you're in great company doing that. Gandhi and MLK felt the same way. And really, the only difference is what your goals were. So, okay, yeah, that's fine. But I think we should also look at this. So what I want to do is a little experiment. I'm going to read some of this article. And what I want everybody to do is pretend they're not talking about left-wing protest. Pretend they're talking about the MAGA people. Pretend that this article was written yesterday, not years ago. So we're going to skip over the part about tensions in Charlotte, North Carolina over police shootings. All right. So because, as it says right here, that misses the point. This sentiment, experts previously told me, underplays the real anger behind riots and urban uprisings. People participate in this type of event for a real reason. Darnell Hunt, a UCLA professor who studied the 1992 Rodney King riots in Los Angeles, said, "It's not just people taking advantage. It's not just anger and frustration at the immediate or proximate cause. It's always some underlying issues. Riots are the culmination of these underlying issues. They might be catalyzed by one particular cause, such as a police shooting, or such as a vote certification of an election that they believe is stolen. But they're also, and here's the key, the result of long-held angers. Broader police abuse, residential segregation, economic inequality, racial tensions generally in America. Or election integrity, political correctness, the institutional capture of academia by the left, the institutional capture by and large by the left, the mainstream media referring to Trump supporters as nothing but dirty racists who want to bring back the Confederacy and slavery, the idea that traditional American values have been marginalized in favor of progressive ones. And I should point out, if you are inclined to say, yeah, whatever, okay, that's fine, Mr. Nice Guy, but the police brutality is real and the stuff the MAGA people are angry about is not real, I would point you to the many, many people on the other side of the aisle who would say exactly the same thing, except in the other direction, and would say, No. Police brutality is not real. Even the Washington Post reported only nine unarmed black men were shot by police. So clearly, BLM is illegitimate and everything that MAGA says is real. Maybe we should come to recognize that we're all saying the same thing. We've just, like, you know, insert grievance here. And so maybe we can just stop playing that back and forth game and recognize that this right here applies to everyone. What's more, the article says, riots can lead to serious attention and change. We see some of this in media coverage today. When Baltimore burst into riots after Freddie Gray died in police custody, its policing problems received a lot more attention by the press, and even led to a U.S. Justice Department investigation that found a local police department plagued by racist practices. So you could say that those riots, as unfortunate as they were, led to actually some good things. Surely nobody wants to live under a racist police department. I certainly don't. Sometimes I hang out with black people, and I would like to not see my reputation besmirched. So for purely selfish reasons, also because it's wrong, and you don't want that. You can't have a country like that. It takes away from the legitimacy of the state. And you need a legitimate state. But ultimately, I would love to see a future where we can add to this paragraph and not just say when Baltimore burst into riots, its policing problems received a lot more attention by the press, and say when the Capitol burst into riots, when Trump supporters burst into the Capitol after the certification of the questioned 2020 election, it led to elections getting a lot more attention. It led to the needs and concerns of the MAGA movement getting a lot more attention. And as a result, those people didn't have to turn to some kind of would-be demagogue. They didn't have to turn to revolution. They didn't have to turn to violence and more rioting. Instead, they were brought back into the political fold. And they were able to make compromises with the people who they disagreed with. And we were able to make real policy that helped everybody get a little bit of what they wanted. But more importantly than any surface issue, it allowed everybody involved to at least feel like they had a voice in the conversation and a place at the table. And that is what we're trying to accomplish here. Because we don't want to descend into civil war. We don't want to spend all of our time just fighting about whether the election was legitimate or not. What we want is to have a real country that really works. And we have an opportunity to do that, because within every crisis is an opportunity. And so as much as the events of Wednesday constituted a crisis, they constituted also an opportunity. So thank you very much for watching. We will be back on Monday, 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, as we are every weekday from 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. So feel free to join us on Twitch, on YouTube, where our show archive also is, if you want to go back and watch old shows, or if you missed part of this one and you want to leave some comments, we will read the most interesting comments on the show. We'll be back to our regular schedule and our regular setup next week. So follow us on Twitch, subscribe on YouTube, or if you're watching on DLive, been having some problems with DLive, but we'll see what we can do there. So we will be back on Monday. We look forward to seeing all of you there. Thank you very much for watching. This has been another episode of Socratic Citizen.